Today is March 18th. My name is Linda Davis, and I'm interviewing Mr. Eugene Thomas Pulliam. Tell us a little bit about yourself and where you were born and how you got into the military.
Well, I was born here locally in Kentucky in the Ball Knob section. Was raised on a farm. Went to school at Ball Knob High School, which I graduated from.
That no longer exists, does it? The Ball Knob High School. It's just Frankfort.
Right.
Yeah.
After I graduated, I got into driving trucks, drove a milk truck around at farms, picking up milk and hauling it into Frankfort here at HB Milk Company. In July the 7th, 1951, I was entered into the service.
Which branch?
Army. Went to Fort Meade, Maryland, where I received all of my shots and assignments and everything. And
that's where basic training was too?
No, well, then I flew from there to
can you remember the state? That's fine.
It was in Western Kentucky.
I'm
trying to think of the name of the camp. And I know it.
Was it close to Bowling Green?
I think it was across the river from Evansville, Indiana.
Does it exist now?
No.
Okay. That's okay. Worry about it. If you're like me, you'll think about it in a few minutes when you quit trying to think about it.
I believe it was Camp Stoneman, but I'm not sure.
That's okay. So you had basic there?
Anyway, yes, I was assigned to the 101st Airborne Division and had my basic training there. And after a couple of jumps, I decided I didn't think I wanted to stay with that, so I transferred to regular Army and flew to Fort Bliss, Texas, and had training with AAA anti-aircraft training. And we finished there, and they gave me three options. Monday, I could start cook school. I could go to Officers Canada training, which would add another year onto my eight-year obligation. Or I could get a 16-day delay en route and go to Korea. So I said, well, I'll take the 16 days and I'll go to Korea. So I came home and stayed 16 days, and then I flew to California and got on board ship and sailed to Japan.
You weren't married at this point?
No, I was still single. I got to Japan and had a change of orders, and they sent me to radio communication school on a little island called Itajima, just off the coast of Japan. And after I finished there, got on board ship, and they assigned me to the 5th Regimental Combat Team, which was guarding prisoners on Kojido Island. I was there about 2 weeks, and then went to the mainland and got on board a train and went north to Pusan.
When you were guarding the prisoners, was that a difficult task to do, or was it a prison camp just like we think about it?
Well, most of the prisoners when I got there were Chinese. Mm. The Chinese had already came in. I got to Korea in early 1952. Anyway, then our entire regiment was self-contained. We had all of our infantry and artillery and tanks and everything, and I was assigned to the heavy mortar company of the 5th Regimental Combat Team. And we, well, get back to the Cozy Dough Island, we were guarding prisoners. When we left there, the whole division got on LST ships and went up the east coast of Korea and made a beachhead landing at Wonsan, I believe.
What's an LST ship? What does that stand for?
A landing. Well, they haul tanks and trucks and troops.
Oh, okay.
All
of it, huh?
You've probably seen them on TV.
They
run up on the beach and the doors open up.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then we got aboard trucks and convoyed over into the punch bowl area.
Explain what that, I've heard that term for years, the punch bowl area. What does that mean exactly?
Well, it was if you look at the History Channel, and they talk about the big asteroids and things hitting Earth and making these big, it was about probably a mile and a half wide and three quarters of a mile, or it wasn't perfectly round.
Right.
About three quarters of a mile by a mile and a half, something like that.
Wow.
And we moved up on the MLR at night and relieved the 24th Division. And we stayed up on the main line, or MLR, 120 days. Which during that time we were attached to four different divisions. All the other divisions came and stayed 30 days and we stayed 120.
Why was that, do you know?
Our company commander, he asked how long anybody stayed on the line. He said 30 days. He said we'll stay 120.
I'm sure you all appreciated that.
But anyway, we stayed there 120 days, and then we moved.
Were you under fire during that time or anything?
Yes, ma'am. Every day. Then moved back into a reserve area to regroup and resupply and get replacements and so forth.
Did you lose many guys?
Well, yeah. There were six of us that left here together and went all the way through together, and only two of us came back. I stayed in touch with a few of others that I was with, and I think the last one of them died last year. We all had problems, you know. A lot of them that I talked to had to have surgeries and had lung, you know, breathing problems and things like that.
Did you also?
Not from that. I've had three back surgeries and, you know, from just overworking, I guess. But anyway, we stayed back in the reserve area 30 days, and then we moved back up to the MLR again. And let's see, I think the first time when we got there was June the 2nd. And after we moved back up the second time, I got R&R leave, went to Tokyo for 6 days, and came back. And
what'd you do while you were in Tokyo? Everything?
Yeah, everything.
My brother was in the Navy and went to Tokyo, so I can only imagine. You had a good time, in other words.
Oh, right? Yeah. They told us we weren't supposed to. I think we landed at Yokohama, or we flew from Korea from Korea to Japan, and they told us we had to stay in this town there where we landed, but we called a cab and told them we wanted to go to Tokyo. Was an experience. There were three of us white guys and one colored fella. And we got in this taxi, and I know we was going up this big, long, straight road with a white line down through the middle, and over there's no speed limits. Wide open. And I saw a bicycle with a chicken coop on the back full of white chickens. And it was coming at us just like that. And just before we hit it, it said, beep, beep. But anyway, we got to Tokyo, and in Tokyo, there's no traffic lights or anything. At the intersections, they have a police officer in a black uniform, white gloves, and a white hat and everything standing up in the center on a big pedestal. And he's this.
Just directing traffic.
So anyway, we told him, we wanted to go to a hotel, so he took us to a little motel called Hotel Fujiyama. You could see Mount Fujiyama from the motel. And it had a big high rock wall around it, and had a limousine that took us everywhere we wanted to go, and picked us up. And anyway, after 6 days, and then I flew back to Korea.
Did you bring anything back from the Tokyo trip? Did you get any souvenirs or anything?
Just a picture of me and one of my buddies and a couple of girls.
You still have that?
Oh, yeah. No. Yeah, I would have brought some pictures and things, but I called, and she wasn't here, and I didn't want to be late, so I came on.
Well, when you do come back another time, maybe come back and visit with your family, do bring them. They would be wonderful to have, so we'll make copies and all that. That would be great.
I've got most all of my medals. I want to have them mounted, but I haven't done it yet.
Which ones do you have?
Oh, we was a highly decorated unit. In the 3 years, our unit was in combat over 90% of the entire 3 years. We have a club that I belong to, and every quarter we get a little booklet type thing, and it lists all of the how many was killed, wounded, and missing, and captured, and everything.
Did you ever get wounded or have any physical thing like that happen to you?
No, I knew of sometimes that I was within a couple of inches of I was eating chow one night, sitting beside a steel drum, and an artillery round went off, and a piece of shrapnel went through that drum right beside of my head. And I was in a bunker one night, and I was sitting in the dark on switchboard duty, and a bullet came through right over my head. There's a lot of things I can't. There's little things like that I still remember.
Well, that's not very little, actually. It's a pretty big thing.
I don't. I don't ever remember having to use a bathroom. I've blocked everything out, I guess.
Well, you hear that's what soldiers do to try and to survive when you get back in the civilian world.
Yeah.
Do you have any memories of it that are particularly bad or particularly good, or you feel like made the hugest impact on you?
Well, the winter, the cold, the morning I left was 42 below zero. The cold, I frostbit my feet, but not enough that I didn't lose any toes or anything.
In that kind of weather, you can't get warm, can you?
No. We dressed. We kept warm. Didn't have any kind of heat, you know. We lived in the sandbag bunkers. We got what we call those insulated Mickey Mouse boots after I frostbit my feet.
You were fortunate you didn't lose any toes or anything,
right,
were you? Was that the most difficult thing of all? I mean, just in general stuff, just the cold?
Well, then there was the monsoon season in the summertime when it rained, and the only way we'd get any food was what the helicopters could fly in, and which mostly used them just for evacuation wounded. I remember we had a bunker with a 2 weeks emergency supplies, which was 5 pound cans of Spam, raw onions, and unsliced loaves of bread. And I got caught one night coming out by one of the guards. When they went in there, we had just about cleaned it out. We was getting a can of sea rations once a day, and we did get a hot breakfast. We got a pack of cigarettes and a candy bar every night when we went through the chow line.
Did most everybody smoke at that point?
Yeah. And smoked and drank and the whole nine yards mostly.
Did you have access to beer or hard liquor or what?
I had a beer ration once a month for, I don't remember how, it came in wood crates and there was 36, 48 cans or something in it. Most of it was either green beer or 3.2, which wasn't.
Not drinking water.
Wasn't much. But I made friends with the company commander, and whenever we got a call at the Class 6 ration in, we knew that was hard stuff. So I'd call the captain at night, and I said, "Captain, you know where I can find a drink?" And he'd, "Yeah, wander on over." He'd give me a fifth of something. And I'm not proud of it, but I came back and I drank 7 days and nights a week for about 3 years. I met my wife, and after a couple of years, I quit that.
You're not the only one that did it. Plenty others did, too.
But anyway, I came back and I worked here and there for a little while. I couldn't stay with the job very long. Not because of the drinking or anything, I just couldn't be tied down to one thing. And finally, I went to work for the state in 1962. I worked in air conditioning and heating. The first 21 years, I was in charge of everything out on the West End. I was at my office stationed at State Police Academy, but I had different buildings out there, Fish and Wildlife and Airport and Berry Hill and the Academy and National Guard Armory and all that. And then during Mr. Brown's administration, somebody asked for my specific job, and they booted me out, and I transferred to Home Street and was spent the last 9 years there.
So you worked 30 years in the state then?
Put in 30 years and retired. I think it'll be 18 years. We'll see, I retired in 91, I believe. I was 61 years old when I retired. I was born in 31. Well, whatever.
What impact do you feel that the military had on the life that you led after you got out? What do you feel like, good, bad, or indifference?
Well, you know, I don't blame my drinking on the military. In fact, I enjoyed the training. I was proud of it. And you know, and I've said now, if they would still take me, I'd be ready to go. Yeah.
Do you have any family members in the military now?
No. I've got a 19-year-old grandson, and I've tried to get him to, you know, to go. You can get a good education in the military now.
Absolutely.
But his mother won't hear of it.
Is that your daughter?
Right. But, well, too, after I came back to the States, I had an 8-year obligation to finish, and I enlisted in the Guard and spent 8 years in the National Guard up here.
What did you do for them? What was your, was it called MOS?
Well, I was RTO, radio, telephone, switchboard operator, but up there it was, I don't even remember the number of the unit I was in, but we just basically had classes and physical exercises and things like that. Didn't do anything as far as radios or anything.
Well, it was one weekend a month and then a couple of weeks in the summer, was that?
I believe we met every Thursday.
Oh, okay.
Up here on Maryland Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
And summer camps. I never did go to summer camp. I got out of there.
Well, do you feel like that the military made a really good impact on your life? Or do you feel like it's a little bit of both?
I think it made a man out of me. I never worried. I never thought about getting killed or getting wounded. It was... I was born and raised going to church and still go, and I think the Lord pulled me through.
You feel like that folks have an obligation to serve their country?
I think they should have never done away with the draft. That's what's making it so hard on these units now. They just one tour and back a little while and back again. And
the military that you served in, do you feel like it's a whole lot different today than it was then?
Oh, yeah.
In a lot of ways, I'm sure. But just in general, morale and all that, you think it's a lot different?
I would probably have stayed and made a career out of it until I got back here to the States. And everything had changed.
How so?
Well, maybe it was just me, but you know, I came back down, was discharged down at Fort Knox, and I was on guard duty one night, and the next morning it was, well, this was in February, I think, last part of February. And, of course, it was been snowing, was cold, and I was going back to the barracks, and I was walking, my hands in my pocket, and I met this second lieutenant. I just walked by him, and he stopped me and said, "Aren't you in habit of saluting officers?" And I said, "No, sir." And he said, "What do you mean by that?" And I said, "Well, where I just came back from," I said, "officers didn't want to be saluted because it made them a target." So he made me report later that morning in front of the company commander, and they took one of my stripes away. And it was just the whole thing had changed. When I was in, of course, with the 101st Airborne, it was, you know, it was a crack unit, and I mean, they made a man physically and mentally both out of you. And like when I went in the guard up here, a lot of them that were officers and sergeants and corporals and lieutenants and captains that I went to school with had never been on active duty. Every time I answered a question, they said, "No, you go over the book." I said, "You don't go over the book." You know.
Well, yeah. I would think that having been in that kind of active duty, being fired upon 90% of the time, gives you a whole different perspective about what the military actually means and is anyway.
You know, I don't think anybody can say they're not scared when they're under fire, but there was things that scared me more, actually, than that did.
Like what?
Well, I was sitting in the dark one night in the bunker, and I heard a noise behind me. Well, there was five of us in there, and the other four were asleep, and I was on switchboard duty. Of course, we had switchboards connected to all the rifle companies and everything. And what my job was giving fire commands to the mortar crews. But anyway, about 2 weeks prior to that, the Chinese had slipped in and had bayoneted and killed a bunch of guys while they were asleep in their bunks. Well, I heard this noise behind me. Well, my carbine was sitting where I couldn't reach it. So I, in my head, I thought one had slipped in, see? So I eased over and I slipped my bayonet out, and I had a flashlight sitting here on the switchboard, and I picked it up and I eased around, turned it on. It was a rat. Oh. Had a box of Hershey chocolate bars.
The rat did?
And the bunkers had a support pole like running from here up to there.
Yeah.
And it was backing up that. They would set its feet and then pull that box.
Well, needless to say, big rat.
I pinned this with my bayonet. But after it was all over, and I got thinking, well, nobody could come in because at night they had big spotlights that shine up across above the punch bowl area, and it was like a full moonlit night outside, but at night we covered up the window, you know, the windows and everything.
Oh, okay.
So if anybody had opened the door and come in, you know, I would have seen them. But I remember little things like that. And I remember the night of July the 4th of 1952, one of the rifle companies had a patrol out that got ambushed, and we was up all night giving them cover and fire to try to get them back. And anyway, some of them got back, and Captain told me, he said, go get a pot of coffee, and I'll fix us some coffee royals. I didn't know what a coffee royal was. So I come back, and he's got a fifth of some kind of whiskey. So he set me a mug down, poured it about half full of whiskey, and poured it, so I filled it up with coffee. So he said, we're going to send out a patrol in the morning to see if we can find, recover any of the ones that got ambushed, and need radio operator to go along. And I said, well, I'll go. So I did, and we found where they were ambushed, but the Chinese had took all of them, you know, had took all of them. So we didn't know whatever happened to them. So he said he put me in for a Bond Star. Well, my records got burnt down in wherever it was down south. So I didn't get that, but I've got the presidential unit citation from the South Korean president and our president. I've got the combat infantryman's badge. Of course, got the good conduct medal and the Korean service medal. And I don't know. I've got a bunch of them. I can't remember what all of them were.
It would be nice if you could have them all mounted. So
that's what I intend to do. And I'm a procrastinator.
You know where they are?
I've got them all in a drawer. I just haven't intended to send them. I've got a few medals that I haven't got yet that I'm authorized to get. I've got a catalog from one of the companies that you can buy. They have the medals, and mm-hmm. you can send them what you've got, and they'll put what you don't have and mount them all for you.
That would be neat. That would be neat for your grandson to have.
I've got something that I don't know if it'd be interested in down here or not. While I was in radio school there in Japan.
How long did that last, the radio school?
14 weeks or something like that. We learned Morse code and voice code.
Do you remember any of that?
Not the Morse code. The other code, you know, we had Abel Baker, Charlie Dog, Easy Fox, George Howe, Item G, King, Love, Mike. And,
you do remember a lot of that.
Now it's Zulu and Alpha and X-Ray. I've got a little gun shop that I operate out of my basement, and whenever I sell somebody a gun, I have to call FBI for a background, make a background check, and they use this new code. It gets me all fouled up.
Do you actually work on the guns yourself?
I do
too?
Gun repair and load ammunition for people. And,
oh, okay. Did you know about guns before you went into the military, or did you learn most of what you know there?
Well, yeah, I didn't know anything about guns other than how to shoot. Of course, I started hunting when I was big enough to shoot a gun. I was born, you know, during Depression, and Dad was gone. He worked, left before daylight and come in after dark every night, and I lived most of my teenage life with my grandparents, and they liked to fish and they liked to hunt. Or my granddaddy liked to hunt, but him and my grandmother both liked to fish, and that was just my thing.
Was your grandfather a veteran?
No.
Did you have anyone that encouraged you to join family wise, or you just decided that on your own?
No, in fact, Dad had gone down and was. Had me exempted where I wouldn't have to go, and I wouldn't take it, because most all of the boys that I was in my class at school had already gone in the Navy or the Air Force or something. I was the only one in the class that actually went to Korea.
Do you feel like people then had a different attitude than people do now about the military and serving the country and all that? Do you feel like it's real different now?
Oh, yeah. If even had the draft now, half the people wouldn't go. I can't see, like, the Guard, where you got a married couple that has children where both of them's in service. It's a hardship on them.
Mm-hmm.
But, of course, most of the people that joined the Guard never thought they'd ever have to fight.
It's true, I think. Well, that's not really what the Guard was set up to do, is it?
It's supposed to guard us home folks.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Well, when you were in the Guard here, you essentially did the same job that you had when you were full-time before. It was just a whole different stateside kind of environment, right?
Well,
you did the radio operations and all that?
No, never did. Not in the Guard.
Oh, really? I misunderstood that then. I'm sorry.
No.
So, what exactly did you do in the Guard? I missed that.
Well, we met on Thursday nights. We had classes which had nothing to do with my MOS. It was just mostly on what you would do under this situation, combat and all that kind of stuff. I know all the trucks and things we had over there were old World War II surplus stuff. We come back here, the National Guard has brand new trucks, and they sent me with one out to on a local road one day to have it serviced or something. I don't remember what it was now. Great big thing with automatic transmission. And
and that was here. When you were in a war over there, you had old equipment.
We had old 41 model white trucks, and I don't remember what all of them were, but if one broke down, they just pushed it over the side of the mountain. And in the wintertime, if you were on guard duty, you had to start every truck every hour and run it for 10 minutes to keep them from freezing up. It was so cold.
You know, that's something I would never have thought of in a million years, but that, yeah.
Yeah.
At 42 below zero, isn't that what you said?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I can see why. Especially if it's old to begin with.
Yeah.
It's amazing. You mentioned the food earlier. Did you guys get the MREs like you hear about today, the meals ready
no.
to eat, I think it's called? Was there any such thing at that point?
Sea rations. There was little green cans about that big, and they might have beanie weenies, maybe scrambled eggs and bacon, sausage and gravy. And what you do, they just throw the cans in a great big pot of boiling water to heat them. And you went through a line, they give you a can. If you didn't like it, you try to trade with with somebody else.
How was the food in the cans? I can only imagine.
Well, I have not eaten any of the MREs, so I don't know. What was in the cans was good.
Really? Of course, I guess you're hungry, too.
Yeah.
You didn't get that much to eat, obviously.
And then you got little flat biscuits that were crunchy. Some of the cans, you get a little flat can about that big with some type of jelly or something in it. And then if at times they just give you the cans, and you had little turpentine tablets, I believe it was, and you flicks a couple of rocks, set the can on it, and punch a hole in it, and then light these little tablets, and that would burn and heat the can. It was heat what was in it.
Well, if that's what you got, that's what you eat, right? Yeah.
Well, I'll give you an example. The day I was inducted, I weighed 111 pounds. And I don't remember exactly how many weeks I was in the 101st Airborne, but I gained 44 pounds of muscle.
And how old were you again?
I was... 19 or 20. See, 51, I'd have been 20, I guess.
Yeah.
Because my birthday's in May, and I went in July. So I was 20.
44 pounds of muscle.
And when I left Japan, I had gained... I was up to 170. And when I got back to States, I weighed 116. Ooh. Right now, I weigh about 135.
You were puny when you got back from the States, weren't you?
Yeah.
How tall are you?
About 5'7½".
Well, between the cold and the not much to eat and whatever, I guess. Did you have health issues in terms of being sick a lot when you were over there? Or did people in general? No.
No.
That's interesting to me. Maybe the cold killed all the germs.
Well, I mean, that could be. You know, my oldest daughter lived in Michigan, and our first grandson was born up there. And right now, they never use air conditioner on a vehicle or anything. My oldest daughter's only got one son. He's 19. And this weather we've been having, he'd go out and work and don't even put on a jacket. Nothing on his head.
Well, some of that may be genetics, too. Obviously, you've got a healthy constitution. Maybe they kind of got some of that from you, you know?
Well, I'm 78. My father's still living, and he's 97. If he lives till May 30th, he'll be 98.
That's wonderful.
I'll be 79 in May.
Is he doing pretty well?
He was, but he just got out of the hospital. Had double pneumonia. Let's see, he got out Saturday before last.
That's amazing. Is he in a nursing home?
No, my sister lives with him. He lives in Shelbyville. She lives with him, takes care of him.
That's incredible. Now, was he in the military, your father?
No, he was.
So he didn't want you to go in. He tried to.
He was too. I guess he was too young. He was 19 when I was born. Maybe he was too old. Maybe they just didn't get...
To go into World War II,
right.
Then? Yeah.
See, he would have been in his late 30s, I guess. Or early 30s.
Did he try to talk to you about, after you got back, did he want to know what went on over there, or what did he want to talk about it at all? Or did you even want to talk about it?
No. Just sometimes, you know, some of the guys sat around and tell little tales about things that happened, but most people don't want to talk about it.
Yeah, I found that to be true. You know, the reason this oral history thing is so good is that I think that, you know, that in what you're talking about and telling us, you know, I think it's really important that we know what war is about. We know what the military is about, and you know, and especially with you guys that are older, that, you know, have your stories to tell. I mean, you've been right in the thick of it. That's why we appreciate it so much, your willingness to talk about it, because some won't. When you were there, that 100 and so days that you were there, did you At that point, did you feel like that was the most difficult thing you'd ever done?
Or did No. I don't know how. It was just a job.
You just did it?
Yeah.
When I asked you earlier about what impact you felt like the military had had on your life, just generally speaking, you said you felt like it had made a man out of you. Do you feel like you'd be a totally different person today had you not been in the military and done everything that you did with it?
I don't know what I would have done if I had went in. I mean, I was raised on a farm, but I went to work driving a milk truck when I was 16.
Did you graduate from high school?
Yeah, I went back. I think my freshman year, I dropped out the last semester and started driving a milk truck. And then the next year, I got set it up with them where I could drive the truck because I usually got through by 10:30 in the morning. And I could go to school a half a day. So I went back and finished up. I just had to go an extra year to make up the part that I missed.
So literally after you got out of high school, you went into the military then, just right directly thereafter?
Well, I was still driving a milk truck. See, I graduated in 1950. And I went in service in July of 51.
So it was almost tight timeline right there. And when did you get married? What year did you get married? I won't tell you.
Well, we was married 53 years, first day of this past December.
53 years.
I think we got married in 56. I can't remember.
It's been a while, hasn't it? And how many children do you have?
Three. Two girls and a boy. I've got four grandchildren, three boys and a girl. Last one's a girl.
And you said you try to encourage your oldest one to join the military. Will you do that with the others, too, when they get older?
Well, now one of them, my son's oldest son graduates this year, and he just got a full scholarship from Georgetown College. I think he said it was worth $33,000.
It's wonderful. What end, do you know?
He wanted to study some type of engineering.
Smart kid, obviously.
Yeah. Straight A student.
It's wonderful. So he's on his career track path mm-hmm. already. That's great.
My oldest son, oldest grandson, he's been in some scraps, lost his driver's license here about a year ago. But he just got him a full-time job about 2 months ago, and he's going to these driving classes. Mm-hmm. I told him, I said, you go take the classes and get your license, and I'll get you a vehicle to drive. Just keep that job. And he's trying to straighten his life out.
Well, we all make mistakes.
Yeah.
And I see what you mean maybe about the military being good for him, considering.
He likes to work on, you know, he went out in high school, he took classes on body work and painting and stuff and mechanical work, and he's a good, that's how he got this job. He's a good mechanic, and the guy he works for, he said all I have to do is tell him what to do, and I can walk off and don't have to worry. He does it.
That's wonderful. Well, he could get really good training in the Army for that, too, or the military in general.
Well, I told him, you know, in the military, you don't have to see combat. You can, if you want a mechanic, you can mechanic on helicopters or trucks, all vehicles, everything.
Yeah. Well, does he ask about your military life, what you did and how you did very often?
No.
Does he know about the medals and things that you have?
I don't think he's ever seen them.
You gotta show him.
They're not interested in anything like that.
Well, maybe if you showed him, he might be, you know? Well, the whole course of when we've been talking, I've been asking you all kinds of questions. Is there anything you'd like to say that you feel like is particularly significant about what you did or the time you were in the military?
Well, I don't know why I went. I just wanted to go.
Did you just feel like it was the right thing to do?
Now, I don't know. It was what we went for was to help the South Koreans, and they're one of our allies now. Where we should be over there, where we're at now, I don't know. I've got some bad feelings about that. You know, those people over there has been fighting for thousands of years, and Russia went in. They stayed, I don't know how many years, and they couldn't beat them. And now we're over there, and it's...
Does it remind you of Vietnam? What you heard about Vietnam, or what you have learned about it?
Well, Vietnam, about all I know, you know, nobody talk about it. It's what you see on TV, in the movies that they're making. In my view, the big problem is the politicians. I mean, if you're going to fight a war, turn it over to the military and let them do their thing. During the Vietnam War, the president had to authorize them to bomb the supply harbors and stuff. They weren't allowed to. But war is war, and it ought to be left up to the military and let them fight to win, not...
I agree. Well, in terms of what you feel like you accomplished, do you have anything that you want to say about that, or what you feel like that you did over there just in general was good or bad?
Well, I think at the time we was there, what we did was good for the people there that we was fighting for.
South Koreans?
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel like that those that maybe that were in the unit with you, that you feel like some of them, given the opportunity, would say that also?
Well, I don't know. We was having reunions down here at Louisville every year until it got down to where there was only five or six out of the whole unit that was coming. But, you know, it was just very little talk about the war itself.
Because nobody wants to talk about it, basically. Well, I've heard that from many veterans, believe me. So, well, if I think we're ready to conclude if you are, unless you have anything else you'd like to say.
I don't know if I've told you anything that'll help or not, but...
You definitely have. And I guess right now we're getting ready to turn the machine off, and Mr. William and I can chat for a bit.
Okay.